I'm Danielle Kermanis.
Welcome back to Karma Has Spoken. We try and keep you in the loop on tips and trends and what's happening. And one trend that seems to always be kind of changing, evolving, and is still our constant go-to is makeup.
Yeah.
So we are here with Jessica Van Valkenburg. So I have to look at my notes because you have
a lofty
last name and I don't want to screw it up.
It is.
And you're pregnant. You're 20 weeks pregnant.
I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
With your first, a girl.
Yes.
So how lucky is she? She's going to have the advantage on all the makeup
tips and
trends.
She's
going to
be the Dior diva. She's going to be spoiled.
A Dior diva. It's the dream.
Yeah.
So you're the marketing coordinator for Christian Dior.
Yes.
So you have the inside scoop on makeup, right?
Yes.
So what do we need to know? Tell us what's happening with tips and trends.
Sure.
How can we look amazing without spending hours watching YouTube tutorials?
Yes.
And what are the biggest mistakes that you see? So
sure.
Starting with tips and trends.
Well, one of the things I really love about Dior is that it's really effortlessly beautiful makeup. So the brand has such amazing integrity from the ingredients that they use, and just the products do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing. Starting with a high quality product is really, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of time wondering what's going to happen because you already know what's going to happen. So I love Dior because our skincare is 80% botanical, 20% science.
I never knew that. Mm-hmm. So has it always been that way? Or is the company constantly evolving?
No, it has been. Christian Dior loved plants and he loved flowers. And so gardening was such a big part of his life. So there's real plants and flowers in all of our skincare, all of our fragrance. We own 9 gardens around the world. So we harvest everything ourselves. There's no middleman. Everything is owned by Dior. So the integrity of the products that you're getting are really incredible. So having that integrity in the products and just being able to count on your product is huge. Because people always say, oh, can I just use something from the drugstore? And some things you can, honestly,
right.
You can skimp on. Mm-hmm. But the things that you really want, like your face creams and your anti-aging, things like that, you really want something that's a good source and that it's going to work really easy. So natural beauty is really in right now. We're kind of moving away from that Kardashian or that kind of Instagram look of wearing a full face of makeup.
With a heavily contour.
Right.
Okay.
Which is still okay for like events or going out.
Mm-hmm.
But we just want to have this like effortless glow beauty. So foundations now, we want to just make them look like your skin. And
okay.
So that's one of the things I love. We just came out with a new foundation. It's called the Skin Glow Forever. And it's in our Forever line. And it just looks like your natural face. You know, when I'm working with a customer, I just want them to feel like this is you. You woke up like this looking absolutely fabulous.
Right.
And you don't have to feel like you're wearing a whole mask or something like that.
So let me ask you, what's the best way to apply the moisturizers and the foundation? So there are the makeup sponges, and I've heard you have to get them wet or just spray something on them. I've also heard with serums, I'm a huge fan of serums.
Yes.
Serums under moisturizers. I mean, people ask me what I use and I don't know, I just pile on like 5 or 6 different ones.
Right.
And I just kind of rub them in. And someone recently told me you're supposed to pat, pat, pat. Does it really make a difference how you apply?
Well, the serum's going to penetrate a little bit deeper. And then the cream is going to create like a barrier to stay on top. So it kind of locks in the benefits. Your serum's usually a little bit more powerful.
Okay.
So that's what's going to really go in and do all the dirty work of like anti-aging, lightening, brightening, tightening.
So
and
does
then,
it matter how you apply the serum? Can you rub it in?
You can rub
it,
but patting it in, it just kind of helps to stimulate that skin. Like if you get your face going just by stimulating it, we call it yoga for your face.
I like that.
Then when you put your products in, they're really going to be able to work a little bit better because you already have circulation going there. So sometimes that patting motion helps with that. I think that's why people
it's
like that.
A good
that.
Little tip, right?
Yeah, but the cream.
Well, it wakes me up in the morning.
Right, right.
A little slap the face.
Exactly. But the cream is really to kind of just keep the moisture on the surface of the skin and then also to lock that in.
Yeah.
So sometimes
I like
people
that.
Are like, oh, I just want to use serum.
Yeah.
I don't want to use cream. But really, for the full benefit, you need both of them.
Okay.
And having that underneath your foundation makes such a big difference because when a lot of my clients say, oh, I hate that I can see my pores or I feel like it's settling in under my eyes.
Yeah.
And it's because they have no barrier. So the skin is very dehydrated and it says, give me moisture.
Yeah.
And it just sucks it in.
Right.
So that's
that
why,
makes sense.
You know, your face ends up looking. We want to look. The trend is now very dewy,
mm-hmm.
very healthy, very glowy, like
mm-hmm.
J-Lo glow, you know, rather than having this kind of matte mask. Things are really changing to a more natural look.
And what's the best way to apply foundation?
You know, people use beauty blender, that's fine, or a sponge. But the thing is, a beauty blender is a sponge, so it's going to soak up your product. So to save a little bit of money.
Shoot, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
A brush will help, like, and not a natural brush. I mean, you can use natural brushes for some things, but a synthetic brush is going to be the best thing for spreading your product and not using it up, because half of it's going to be in your sponge. So you just will go through it a little faster.
Right.
If you're using that.
I'll typically use a foundation brush and I kind of paint on my foundation.
Yep.
Sometimes I'll mix a few different foundations, but then I'll end up going, you know, wherever I'm going, and I'll be talking to someone thinking, oh my gosh, did I forget to blend my foundation?
Right.
I've heard that maybe you should rub your hands together to get a little warmth and then pat your face. Do you think that makes a difference?
I think it just goes back to really the quality. Like if the foundation is made and the match, this is a huge thing too. Mm. We always want to make sure that your foundation is matching your neck exactly.
So how do you do that? Where is the best place to... How do you sample? How do you test that if you don't have access to the product?
Well, that's job security for me.
Okay.
You get to come to the store and you get to, you know, work with... One of the things that's great about Dior, too, is that we don't do like a gift with purchase like some lines. That's like their thing, you know, right. A bonus or a gift. Mm-hmm. We have the experience of having all of our trained beauty stylists who really can advocate for you and say, okay, this color... Sometimes you can wear more than one. I say it's like a bra. You know, You could wear more than one size, but you want the best fit for you.
Yes.
So you want the color that's going to really match your neck. There's an old school way of kind of blending it down in your neck and just like hoping no one noticed.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I do. Well, I'm learning so much.
I mean, it's okay to blend down. You know, of course, you want to have coverage. But really, if you have a good match, you should be able to just end it at your chin. Okay. And it should just be a perfect fluid. So yeah, we can. I mean, we definitely can help with that. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And that's really the advantage of coming to the store rather than just buying online. You know, I mean, online is great and it's really convenient, but we need that contact with other women, empowering them, coaching them, and really helping them to build confidence so that they don't, like you said, feel like, oh my gosh, did I blend my makeup? Or, oh, am I wearing the right color?
Yeah.
You know, they can just feel confident.
Store?
I handle the whole Michigan market. So we are in Macy's, Nordstrom, and Saks here in Michigan.
What are the biggest beauty mistakes that we tend to make?
Yeah. So I think the biggest mistake is just being stuck in a rut and kind of just being like, this is what I've always done. And trends are like neon. They're bright. I love like your green eyeliner you have on
today.
Thank you. That's, you know, just taking a little chance.
Well, I knew I was talking to you today, so I had to up my game a bit.
Well, you can have like a very natural face, but just adding like one little pop of something or a pop of a lip or going with a blush you might not necessarily wear. I wouldn't say pop all three things because then it just gets a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
But really taking a chance. So, you know, I think that people... The biggest mistake they can make is just doing the same old thing and saying, oh, I just wear neutral browns and, you know, and really taking a chance and stepping out. When I show somebody something different, they're usually like, oh my gosh, I would have never ever picked this, but this makes me feel so good.
Yeah.
So confident.
Okay. So is there one other piece of advice that you would give our listeners that's important when looking for products? What's the one product, the one piece of advice and the one product that everyone needs to know?
I think there's a big part of makeup and wellness is feeling good while you're doing it. So try it, put it on, and like, do you want to have a ritual out of it? Like, is this something that you want to do that makes you feel good every night? Some of our products come with like rollers that you can really roll around your eyes. And it feels like a treat. It feels like a mini spa.
I love that.
And so anytime that you can incorporate some kind of good feeling to just, you know, and so then it's a little bit more than just vanity. You know, it's like, oh, I'm doing this to take care of myself. It's actually self-care rather than saying, I just want to put my makeup on, or finding a way to make it a little bit more personal and make you take the time for yourself to do that. Like, especially with our nightly routine, it's really important. You know, when we put our makeup on during the day, usually we're rushing because we have to get to work or kids or whatever. But at night is really the time when maybe you can think about what you're grateful for, or just how your day went, and then have that time to yourself.
Oh, I love it. Make it part of like a really soothing, relaxing self-care routine.
So you want to make sure they feel good, you know, products feel good, because if you're putting it on and it just doesn't really feel good, then you're not going to enjoy it and you're not going to want to do it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining us. I learned a lot. Okay.
Yes.
My last question. You mentioned the rollers.
Mm-hmm.
I keep my roller in the fridge. Is that
good? That's a great trick.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Because that's just like a little, like the cucumbers on your eyes, you know, it's just like a little treat at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But actually the roller that we have, it's made of a material that's meant to always feel cool too.
Oh, that's
so nice. Even in the summertime or when it's humid, like it still feels really nice.
And it helps with puffiness and dark circles and all that.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. That one, it's called the Prestige Eye Cream. It's amazing.
Oh, I'm going to come get it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you so much.
My trailer. Good luck with your pregnancy.
Thank you.
And little diva.
Yeah. Come see
your
us
diva.
At Dior anytime. Me and baby, we'll be there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
When you look good, you feel good. But sometimes we think that beauty is pain. Our next guest figured out an all-natural shortcut to go from flop to fab and picked up a patent along the way.
Please welcome the founder of Naturalicious, Gwen Jameer. Hi, Gwen.
Hey, girl. I'm going to have to use that in a marketing campaign.
Oh, of course. I'm really good at the one-liners. So I've got you. Whatever you need.
Love it.
You just give me a task. I'm on it.
Got it.
Oh, my gosh. Where do we even begin? I mean, there's so much I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about your boyfriend, who's amazing, right?
Yes,
I want to talk to you about your son, who's amazing. You're the first African-American woman to hold a patent, right?
For a natural hair care product.
For natural hair, mm-hmm. which is a huge deal. So yeah. I want to find out what that process was like.
Yep.
But let's start with Naturalicious. What were you doing at the time? What was kind of the catalyst? From what I understand, you were in your kitchen, like pulling out products and produce.
Yep.
And here you are, like major player business owner with a patent.
Yeah.
How do you get from there to here?
Yeah. I love telling this story because I think that representation matters. And I think a lot of times when people start businesses, we're all, especially in the startup world, we're always like, there has to be this ton of capital that you start with, or you need to have an investor and or a rich family. And I had neither of those.
Right.
So I was starting my business literally with $32.
Okay.
I had no money. And I'll tell you how I got to that
point. Yes, please do.
So I started my career, corporate career, as the global digital communications director at Ford.
Okay.
So this big fancy job, fresh out of grad school.
Okay. And how did that, where did you go to school?
I went to Kent State University, which is in Ohio.
Okay. And you grew up in Ohio.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So I went there, went to undergrad, got my comp sci degree, got my master's, got hired.
And what did you get your master's in?
Communications and marketing.
Okay. So getting hired at Ford at the time must have felt like a huge.
It did.
This is like locking in the rest of your life.
It did. It did. And I grew up in a family that was, we were poor, but I didn't really know we were poor because there was just so much love. And I pretty much had what I needed, but my mom was just really good with like budgeting.
Yeah.
And I didn't know we were poor until I went to college and there was like no money for me to go to college. So I had to take out all these loans.
Well, and I do, I want to make sure, I want to make a note right now to make sure we circle back to your mom because she sounds pretty amazing. And
she
was pretty instrumental in your development of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. So she must have been, when you were, now, in hindsight, when you're growing up, are you recognizing she was pretty clever, right? Not
she
only
was.
In finances, but it sounds like she was innovative, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So maybe she was a scientist before you even knew it,
pretty much. Yeah. And she'll be thrilled to listen to this because you can
really
good. Proud.
Well, tell her I'm
she
a
loves
big, big
to get
fan.
The prize.
Well, she should.
But so I go and I grew up in a family where working either for the government or working in the auto industry meant you had made it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to have graduated from grad school and to be moved to Michigan by Ford.
Mm-hmm.
I have this big fancy title, six-figure salary. This was like, my daughter is like...
I kind of have goosebumps right now just hearing
that.
That was
deal.
Major. And how many siblings do you have?
I have one, but we're 16 years apart.
Okay.
She's older. Her name's Monica. She's... Shout out, Monica.
Hi, Monica.
but the cool thing about my rearing was that I had a sibling, but because we were so far apart...
Yeah, it was
I
like two
grew
only
up like
children.
In, two only children. So I had the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So I get this job at Ford and everything's going great. I get married and... After I get married, I get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing that, you know what? Ford is extremely demanding.
Yeah.
You know, I think you hear a lot about the perfect job or like the dream job.
Yeah.
And I had a fabulous blue Mustang. I had a corporate card. I had a corner office. But with all of that came my life was Ford. It was like if
you're kind
I
of, like this sounds negative and it's not negative on Ford or any of the automotive companies. But the price you pay is you kind of sell your soul, right?
You sell your time.
Yeah. You're giving them your everything, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was traveling and it sounded great to say, oh, I'm going to the All-Star game or I'm going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I'm not really watching these. I'm more or less in the back, like doing the stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So the travel was, it was just a lot. And I realized after I got pregnant that I wasn't going to be able to sustain being a new mother and that job at the same time.
Right.
So I said, I'm going to choose my kid. So I then left Ford and moved over to the agency world and I worked for Uniworld.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So Uniworld is, or at least at the time, it was the oldest African-American owned marketing agency in the world.
Okay. Clients, and are they based here in
Detroit?
They're based
in Detroit.
Okay.
Yep. They also have an office in New York. Clients ranging from Ford to, I believe, McDonald's to Walmart, like tons of clients in multicultural marketing. So I move over there. I've got a higher salary. Less responsibility. So it's perfect for me. I don't have
the
car anymore.
So did you have flex hours or were you working from home?
I had normal regular hours, but they were normal hours. It was
Got
like
it.
8 to 5 kind of thing.
I
wasn't like 6 in the morning till two in the morning plus or travel. Whenever they wanted to call me and tell me to do something. Yeah. You know? So I've got this kind of good groove going on. Things are going good. And then I find out that the company is being sold and they have a new owner. New owner comes in, sweeps the employee base clean, starts everybody over. So I'm one of those casualties. So here I am. And by the way, during this time, I'm also going through a divorce. So I'm divorcing my husband.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm the breadwinner.
Okay.
So, and I've got this newborn.
And how old is he at this time?
He's like 1.5.
Okay.
So I've got no money. I'm paying my divorce fees, his divorce fees. It was an abusive relationship. So I was like, I got to get out of here.
When? What?
It was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like abusive in every way, like mentally, physically, emotionally, what have you. And I was like, I can't stay here because one, I didn't grow up like this. I don't even know what this is like. This is foreign to me. And on top of that, I have this son who's going to emulate his dad.
Yeah.
And I can't have him thinking that this sort of behavior is normal.
So how did you find the courage to get out, to escape?
I think I grew up in a household where I was always taught to just be really confident. I've never lacked confidence or felt like I was unworthy of love in the right way.
Yeah.
But I think I left as soon as I did because of my son, because I kept looking at him thinking like, you're going to think that this is normal, even though you're going to know it's wrong. You're going to feel like this is the norm and this is how you're going to treat your wife or your girlfriend. And I can't have that.
Isn't that amazing? As a parent, sometimes we can make decisions that if we were making them for ourselves, we wouldn't possibly have the strength to do. But when you're making it for your child, you become superpower.
Yeah, you really do. Exactly.
So if you don't mind me asking, was it that relationship, you know, for people who are listening who might be in the situation or know someone who's in that situation, was it a slow boil where it started happening a little bit and then all of a sudden one day you realized it was hot water and it was really bad? Or did you know right away?
Yeah.
You know, I think it seems like oftentimes when women are in these situations, there's a tendency to try and make it work or make excuses or think it's going to get better. Thank God you got out when you did, and you got out relatively quickly.
Yeah, we were only married for like 2 years, two and a half years. So it wasn't long, maybe three at most. We weren't married for very long.
Okay. But your strength is really an inspiration to so many women and women who are listening right now, like I said, or who might know someone. So
it definitely was a slow boil. So I will tell you, everything was perfect. He was like the perfect guy. And I'm not saying all this to bash him, but this is the reality of what happened.
Yeah.
Everything was great. We got married and on our honeymoon is where we started having issues. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being on our honeymoon and he jokingly said, "You're the bane of my existence." And I was like,
"Oh,
what?" And I was like, "Are you joking?" He's like, "Oh, I'm just kidding." And it kind of became like this like joking and jest sort of thing where he would say things. Well, obviously, I wasn't the bane of his existence, but it was just like he would say these like really negative, derogatory things and then spin it like a joke to affect my self-esteem.
Yeah.
And it was very manipulative in that way.
Yeah.
And it started out being just him creating arguments where there was not really a need for an argument for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started turning into him not showing up at times where he was supposed to come home. And then it turned into like him kind of aggressively pushing me against the wall. So it never got to the point where he was like beating me.
Right.
But it was growing to that because I think when these sorts of relationships, I don't think it, I mean, I could be wrong because I'm not a psychologist, but I don't think it starts out usually with them just like beating you in the face. I think a lot of times it starts out with them seeing what they can get away with.
Right.
And then if that's allowed, then they'll try something else. And if that's allowed, then they'll keep pushing the envelope. And it got to the point where I got pushed against the wall. And the breaking point for me, I had already started to think about filing for a divorce very early on. And I felt bad about it because I was not even a whole year into my marriage. I think we've been married like 8 months. And I was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But to your point, I was like, you know, my parents have been married for 54 years. So I saw this like happy home and people work through things. So I was like, you know, we're going to try to make this work. And I offered us to go to counseling. He would go to counseling, but then he stopped. It was just kind of, you know, and I asked the counselor, and I was like, when am I going to feel like enough is enough?
Yeah.
And she was like, when you feel truly in your heart that you've exhausted all of your resources and you've tried everything and you're not being met halfway, that's truly when you'll really leave.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I just couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
But really, the breaking straw for me was, even though I had already filed for divorce, I had the divorce papers. I just hadn't filed them.
Okay.
I was still trying to work it out. And I ended up...
And did
up,
he know you had... You
he
had
did
the
not
papers?
Know. Okay. No, he didn't know.
Okay.
I hit, you know, hit them or what have you. Because I really wanted it to work.
Yeah.
He...
Because you're a winner.
Yeah.
Because you'd
yeah,
been successful,
I, yeah,
right? You're a winner,
exactly.
right? You're a winner now. You're a winner then. You went to college. You got your master's.
Yeah,
you're used
I didn't
to
want
be,
to fail.
You make things succeed.
Yeah. yeah. And he had a birthday. His birthday fell during the week.
Okay.
But his party I had planned was on the weekend.
Okay.
And so during the week, I had this woman come by. We did a in-home wine tasting. It was really cute and small. And he ended up getting drunk off the wine.
Okay.
so can I swear on here? Is that okay? Can I swear?
No.
Okay,
I mean, so you can. Then he has to beep it out.
Okay. So I will paraphrase what he said.
Okay.
So he's drunk and everybody leaves. He randomly says to me, "This is what the F you came up with for my birthday." And I was like thinking in my head, you have this party happening on Saturday, like huge, like 50 people coming, people flying in from
yeah.
out of town. I've got this like $700 grill you wanted, you know, waiting for
yeah.
you. And he doesn't know all that. He's just like, this is what you came up with. You couldn't do any better than this. And I was just like, so ungrateful. So then
what a baby.
I know. And then we had a friend who was there at the party and all of us were having a discussion and I agreed with what the friend was saying.
Uh-huh.
And we're all having this lighthearted conversation. And he says, how do you think the F it makes me feel for my wife to be on some other dude's D word? And I'm like, I just agreed with his joke, his comment.
Man.
And so it really, I was like, you know what? I don't deserve this.
And what
this.
Did, no, you don't. And what did everyone around you do?
Well, this was after everybody had left. He would never do this in front of
later.
People.
Okay.
It was always in private.
Right, yeah.
And so,
coward.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, I don't need this. So I was like, you know what? I've tried everything that I can. This is not working. And this is the divorce papers. We gotta do this. So he then grabs me, chokes me, throws me against the wall. And I'm like, you know how they say in movies, like your life flashes before your
yeah.
eyes? Like literally that happens for real.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, my kid's in the other room sleeping. I'm going to die. Because my ex-husband was like 6'3", maybe like 240 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, but I do have a black belt in karate, by the way.
Of course
so
you
somehow
do.
Somehow I like ducked out and I like ran into the bathroom and he barreled the door down, broke it. It was a super dramatic situation. Hole in the wall, door broken, all that. I call the police. Please come get him. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know
and
what?
And meanwhile, you already have the papers.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I already get, and this is
yeah.
all, you know, and I'm like, this is the reaction that you get when I give you divorce papers. I can only
right.
imagine had I stayed
right.
in the situation. So
right.
longer story short, he's out the picture. So we're going through the divorce process. I've got $32 because I'm paying for his divorce and mine because I'm like, I just want out.
Yeah.
Forget the money. I'll
right.
figure
right.
That out later. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So I have $32 and while I was pregnant with my son, I started being really conscious of ingredients
of
that
course,
were in hair
right.
and skincare
yeah.
products. You know, our skin is our largest organ on our bodies.
Yeah.
And
I was the same way when I was pregnant and I did 3 months of bed rest with my twins and I think I was 25 weeks with them and I was hospitalized and I had to switch OBs and they said, you know, your babies probably won't survive. And, oh, I know. And these two doctors are standing there and they said, you know, if they make it to 30 weeks, which they probably won't, we're going to rush them to the NICU at Beaumont, but they probably won't survive. Like, why would you say that? Right. And I'm in the hospital bed. I don't know where Pete had gone. And I said, oh no, these babies aren't coming before 36 weeks. And it was like, with all my courage, I mean, here I am, not to be gross, but I'm like in the gown with a catheter, the whole, like, couldn't be more vulnerable,
sure.
right? I'm like, they're not coming before 36 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think my voice was shaking a little bit and they
yeah.
kind of looked at each other and they rolled their eyes. And I said, oh, and since you rolled your eyes at me, I'm not having a C-section, I'm having them naturally.
Look at you.
And then they kind of looked at each other and they laughed. I go, oh, okay. And since you laughed at me, I'm going to have them with no drugs either. And then they just kind of walked
it.
Out of the room.
And
can I tell
that.
You something? That's what I did. I came
I
home,
love it.
I had 3 months of bed rest and all natural stuff. I had extreme morning sickness, so I only ate for fuel, but mm-hmm. I was really mindful. I mean, occasionally, sometimes you need Taco Bell, right? But sometimes
sure.
you need like a Faygo Mountain Mist and,
yeah.
you know, cheddar and sour cream chips. But mostly very mindful of what I was putting in my body, what I was putting on my body.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wouldn't use any sort of self-tanner or certain kinds of makeup.
Yeah.
I very, very much, this was 10 years ago, very much believed in the power of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
So bed rest for me was mentally the hardest thing I've ever done. Like you think, oh my gosh, you get to like lay around watching TV for three
yeah.
months. Like, yeah, sign me up. It's not that.
Boring.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it's very hard.
I would have to have a sense of purpose every day, even if it was saying, okay, from 11 to 12, I'm going to do a Sudoku, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, I, to this day, very much feel that being intentional on the holistic kind of elements
mm-hmm.
and the vitamin D and being outside was really why I was able to keep them. And I delivered them, by the way, my water broke at home at 36 weeks. I delivered them naturally with no drugs.
I love it.
And then the doctor came in after and said, that was the best delivery I've ever been a part of. And I said, wait a minute, let me get my camera. Say it again. And I recorded them.
I love it.
But anyway, I totally get it. You know, when you're pregnant and you're so vulnerable mm-hmm. and it's your first and you're going to do everything you can to protect this thing growing in you that, you know, there's something maternal that takes over and your maternal instinct has now changed the lives of so many people.
Well,
so,
thank you.
Okay, back to your story.
Okay, that was so, I'm trying to keep the story short. So,
no, don't. We don't want to miss anything.
So I was pregnant. So prior to me having my son, prior to all this like slam me against the wall kind of stuff happened, I'm pregnant with my son mm-hmm. and I see this movie that Chris Rock has, documentary he's produced called Good Hair.
Right.
And in the movie, there's this one part that stuck out where he takes a can of soda. He submerges it into like this big tub of hair relaxer, which is the same stuff I was using to straighten my hair permanently at the time. And this Coke can, aluminum can disintegrates in like 45 minutes.
Holy cats.
And I'm thinking like, I've been doing this to my hair since I was 9.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm probably like 27.
Okay.
So I'm like, what kind of have I been putting in my hair?
Right.
You know, but more than that, if that does it to this aluminum can, what's it going to do to my baby?
And it's so close to your brain.
Exactly. So in that moment, I decide no more relaxing my hair. Problem is, I haven't really seen my real hair texture since I was 9. And I don't remember what the heck that looked like, right? So I go to the store, Whole Foods, and I'm like, let me start looking for products that are natural and organic and try those and get them home. I do that, get it home. My hair looks like a big basketball afro from like the 70s. And I'm like, this is not the look that I want. I want curl definition. I want it to be pretty. So I say, fine, let me go in my kitchen and start looking for stuff in my pantry and in my refrigerator. So I've got the eggs, I've got the mayo, I've got the avocados, the olive oil, whatever. And I'm mixing all this stuff up and I put it on my hair and it's okay. It's better than the products at Whole Foods.
How did you wash it out? All
just,
that. I've
I
tried
just
that.
Like, it out.
Oh, really? I tried mayonnaise once and it took me
forever.
Well,
you know, the trick, at least with eggs, the trick with eggs for washing out is to make sure you use cold water. Because if you use hot water, it will literally fry the egg on your head.
You just changed some lives.
And I've had that happen before. I'm like, what is this smell?
Yeah.
And it's egg in your hair. So eggs are great for protein for your hair, but you got to make sure you rinse it out with cold water.
So let me just ask you quickly, does Chris Rock know? Did he ever find out about your story?
No.
We need to find him.
Yeah.
Okay. If anybody listening knows Chris Rock, have him call Gwen.
Yes.
I mean, I really think he would love to know that he made this documentary, which inspired you.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're buying all this produce and products.
Yep. So I've got this stuff in my kitchen and it's working okay. It's better than the stuff I bought at the store, but it's still not amazing. So my mom, here we go with my mom. She's a master herbalist. So I call mom and I say, Mommy, I'm trying to figure out this stuff with my hair and what I got isn't working that great. It's okay, but it could be better. What can you suggest? So she gives me a lot of different suggestions. She's like, well, try this with this and blah, blah, blah.
Meanwhile, she's like, I've been waiting for this call. I've been praying for this.
So I go and I research everything she suggested. A lot of the stuff I've never even heard of.
Okay.
One of these ingredients led me down a rabbit hole. And that rabbit hole led me to this other ingredient called Rasool Clay.
Okay.
Now, Rasool Clay is only found in Morocco in a very mountainous area called the Atlas Mountains, and it's created through volcanic activity. And I was like, I've never heard of this before, but this is cool. I hear about it. It's got all these great Ayurvedic properties and people in India love it and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, I'll get it and I'll try it.
Yeah.
So I have it flown in because you can only get it there. So I have it imported and I get a little bit of it and I mix it with some of the other stuff she suggested and along with my eggs and everything or whatever. And it was just like, oh my gosh, the gates of heaven just opened. And for the first time in my life, I really loved, like truly loved how my hair felt and looked.
Wow.
Even when I was younger, I hated my hair my whole life.
Aww.
And I absolutely adored it. I was like, how does no one know about this stuff? Uh-huh. This is incredible. Now, there's other ingredients like bentonite clay that people have heard of. But Rasool Clay was kind of like on the low, like really nobody had ever used it or heard of it in cosmetics before. And I wanted it as like my little secret. So while I'm pregnant, I'm using this stuff on my hair and friends are coming over. My sister's coming by. My mom's visiting. They're like, what are you using? It looks so great. Meanwhile, my mom's like beaming because she like suggested this stuff for me. And I would just give it to my friends as like, here, I use this on my hair. You can, you know, try it yourself. And they started using it. And I, to go along with this product, I found out that it was naturally becoming a shampoo, a conditioner, a deep conditioner, a detangler, and it did the work of a leave-in conditioner all at one time. So as a busy mom, I'm not having to buy and use five different things. Right. I got one product. It gets me in and out the door. I'm used to spending like 2 hours on my hair.
Yeah.
I'm spending like 15 minutes.
Wow.
I'm like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
So I create like a hair cream and a styling cream and some more things to go along with it. And I'm just giving it out to my friends.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be a business. But fast forward to the divorce. So now I'm getting divorced. I've got $32 in the bank. I get laid off.
Okay.
30 days before my divorce is final. So I'm like, I'm a single mom now. I've got no income. I can't count on him to help me.
And are you staying in your house? Or
I'm still staying in my house.
Out. Okay.
I'm still staying in my house.
Okay.
Yep. I don't want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because
right.
I'm a winner.
You're a winner.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and he told me, he's like, this is a two-income household. There's no way you're going to be able to afford this by yourself. So you're going to need me. And that was like kind of like how you felt with your babies.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you just wait.
Uh-huh.
And you watch what's going to happen.
That gives me goosebumps.
And
yeah.
So I found myself saying, okay, I got laid off from my job. I don't want to like sell drugs.
Right.
I
no, we really don't want you to do that. No, not a good option.
Become like, you know, like
drug dealing
money.
Is never a good option.
No. And I don't want to like make money like as a stripper. So
no, Gwen,
what else
would
I do?
About? No, drug
like,
dealing or stripping.
So I
have my master, so naturally the two options are
drug dealing or stripping.
Oh
right?
Dear.
But no, my point is that I want it to be like something like legal and moral that I could do, but I need to make money quick. You know what I mean? So I'm like, what can I do to make a significant amount of money today? Right.
Yeah.
And so I was like,
option three, be a game changing inventor.
Yeah, that was the third option. So it was like, okay, great. I have this hair product people love and I'm giving it away for free right now. My biggest customer is my mother and she's not even paying.
Uh-huh.
But let me try and make this a business. So that's how it
became. But you don't charge
business.
Your mom now, do you?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I didn't charge her then. I mean, you know, but it was like, let me turn this into a business.
Yeah.
And so I started to really start to think. And I think when your back is against the wall and you have really nowhere else to go,
mm-hmm.
you get really creative
mm-hmm.
really quickly and you find ways to make stuff work. I would go to Eastern Market. My son was at this point, he had just turned 2.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still kind of in his like stroller and
yeah.
I would take him. He was really cute. He's still cute, but he was really cute then. And I would use the products on his hair and I would completely pimp him out. And
yeah.
like have people like, oh my God, look
totally
at the
irresistible.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I would use him to bring people over and I would sell out every weekend. So then there was a Whole Foods store. That
so
was
you're at
opening.
Eastern Market with a booth.
Well,
okay.
No.
Kind of ish.
No,
no.
I didn't have a booth. I was like, I didn't have money for a booth.
You were like on the sidewalk?
I was like just showing up.
Oh, yeah. You had a wagon?
I had a table that I had in my basement. It was like this little like makeshift table. I would just show up.
Were you like out of the trunk?
Yeah, kind of. But I would like
okay.
show up and I would
that's
be amongst.
But that's a good part of the story.
Yeah.
Because it shows your scrappiness,
I
right?
I would be amongst like the Eastern Market people with the booth and
yeah.
I would just like set up my table
yeah.
as if I belonged there.
So
but I
think these
really
parts of the
there.
Story are, I mean, we're like laughing about them, but they're really so important and
yeah.
they're a testament to you and not only your IQ, which obviously you're very bright and you have the degrees and all that, but your EQ, right? Like mm-hmm. your scrappiness and your drive and you know, how you were able to get the patent, which we'll talk a little bit about later.
Yeah.
So I think those moments of the stories of just showing up at Eastern Market,
mm-hmm.
that I think not only do I want to give you a shout out for doing it, but also for everyone who's with us, who's listening, who maybe is a little hesitant, like just go do it.
Yeah,
right?
Just
go do
it.
Yeah.
You know, this is a really great book that Damon John wrote called The Power of Broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it talks about how when you have money available to you, you tend to be less creative because you can
sure.
just throw money at something and see if it works.
No doubt.
When you have to be scrappy and you don't have the money and
yeah.
you are broke, there's power in that because
yeah.
it forces you to try to do out the box things
yeah.
to make stuff work. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that's kind of like the testament to that, just showing up at Eastern Market. So I did that for a few weeks and it went well enough for me to be able to recoup my costs and buy more product. And then I would just pay my bills with whatever was left. And so here I am still in the house and I'm feeling good about myself because
uh-huh.
I haven't succumbed to what my ex has said that was going to happen to
mm-hmm.
me. Meanwhile, my whole family's like, look, if you ever want to come home, you know, we got you. Just come home if you need to. And I'm like, no, we are not moving out of this house. I didn't want my son's life to be any different. I wanted
yeah.
him to go to the same school, same daycare. I wanted him to have the same activities. He was in swimming. And it was my mission.
Well, good
to make
for you.
Sure
that would have been really easy to go back to Ohio.
Yeah, it
yeah.
would have. But I wanted to make sure that his life was the same outside of the fact that his dad wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
It was already going to be hard enough that it was just like, where's dad now?
Right.
Even though he was only 2 and doesn't remember any of this.
Right.
I just didn't want anything to change.
Yeah,
for
no,
him.
I get it. Yeah.
And so Eastern Market's happening. There's a Whole Foods store that's opening in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, okay, I know Whole Foods is really big into local and supporting small brands. I wonder if I can get my product into Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. It would validate my brand, all that sort of stuff. And meanwhile, there's no store at this point. It's like ground zero. They're building the building up.
Okay.
So I'm calling around to all the stores in the area, like, who's in charge of this downtown Whole Foods? And I don't know if you remember, but at this time, this was a big deal because there were no Whole Foods in like urban areas.
Right.
They were all in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So it was like national news that Whole Foods was opening in Detroit. So I finally find out who the right person is. I email this guy and I say, hey, my name's Gwen Jameer. I have this company. Can I meet with you to present my products for possible inclusion on your shelves? So he says, yeah, just come in for a meeting. So I get to the meeting on time. He's 2 hours late.
Oh,
and I'm like thinking like
2 hours.
He's never going to show up. Right?
Right.
He's never going to show up. But for some reason, I stayed. I don't know why. But I just felt like I had to
maybe
get
a higher power, because 2 hours is a long time.
So I'm looking at it, but the secretary's like, he's coming.
Yeah. And so you're sitting there in the waiting room?
Yeah.
You're in the waiting room for 2 hours.
Yeah,
you're not just like meandering around the store.
No. Okay. Remember, the store doesn't exist yet.
It's not open yet. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
They had like this little office that they had.
But you're in a twin
it
because you're a winner.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Right.
So I sit there and he finally shows up and he's super apologetic. He was like, you know what? I'm so sorry. We had people coming from out of town. And we were just talking, time got away from us, and I didn't realize how long it had been until our meeting had already started. And they had gone to like lunch or dinner like an hour away. So they had to drive an hour. So I'm like, it's fine, no worries. So we start the pitch. And remind you, I sell products for like curly haired women, right? He's like this bald white guy. And so he's like, I don't understand. Because I'm pitching this whole idea of, okay, I have now this 3-step system I've created with this Russell Clay-based product amongst everything else. And it's 3 products. It delivers the results of 12 products, saves you 80% of the time you spend on your hair, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't spend any time on my hair.
Right.
Well, he doesn't have any hair.
Right.
So
it's like not
like,
computing.
Yeah, he's not getting. He's like, I don't understand why this is even an issue.
Uh-huh.
Why we need this. Why is this a problem? So I can tell I'm losing him. I'm like, oh my God.
You're losing him. He's coming in late from another meeting.
Yeah.
He's
I'm
just like,
oh,
like
tell
not
the fact that you're being late. You're not going to give me the
he's
deal.
He's like, not ideal space.
Yeah.
So... Okay,
again,
so things are slipping away, divine intervention, and a winner.
What's for you is for you when it's for you. I always say that.
Wait, say it again.
What's for you is for you when it's for you, right? And no matter if you feel prepared or not prepared or what have you. In walks this Latino woman, big head of curly hair. She was the reason why they were late, right? So she came in from Chicago. She was like headquarters in Chicago somewhere.
Okay.
And she was like the main buyer for beauty.
Okay.
For Whole Foods in this region. She comes in. I didn't know this, but she comes in. She's like, can I join this meeting? Like, randomly. Like, why would you ask that? But she randomly
says, no one ever does that.
No. And he's like, oh my gosh,
I mean,
yes,
meetings
please.
Are the worst.
<He's not laughs>
no one ever wants to join meetings.
He's got this, like, sigh of relief on his face. Like, yes, please join this meeting. So I'm like, great. So I can start this over. I start pitching her same idea. She immediately understands.
She gets it.
She's like, man, you see all this hair on my head? I have 2 little girls with the same hair. I have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning just to do their hair so we can all get to work in school on time.
Wow.
If I could get up at a normal hour, like 7, when we all have to be to work at 8:30 or school to work at 8:30, that would change my life. That would be amazing. So I'm like, great. So she's like, I love it. We need it. And I want to take it home and I want to try it. And if it works for me, I'll give you a purchase order. She calls me 2 days later, gives me the purchase order.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just one store.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like the world. Because now I'm like, okay, Whole Foods, you already understand what the price point's going to be.
Right.
You already understand the quality you should expect. It validates it to so many people.
It validates so many levels.
It was so great. And that really set the tone for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because now... I was only in one Whole Foods store, but I milked that like I was in every Whole Foods. Like, I was like, we're in Whole Foods now. And, you know,
you should,
my
though.
Friends
That's
were like really
huge
excited.
Deal.
So people would, and I would, again, being scrappy, I would go and I would do the demos and I would be there every day at like noon. And at that particular Whole Foods, it's right next to the hospital.
Right.
So everybody would go to Whole Foods for lunch. And so I'm like, let me go and demo at that time. And I would get all the curly hair people. Like, doesn't matter what your ethnicity was. Like, everybody was buying from me. And so that's how I really kind of got started and built some of the, like, at least local brand awareness. Then I had the really, 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 really good fortune of someone, just word of mouth, who worked at the White House, knowing about our products. And I got a call on my phone from the White House. And I'm thinking, this cannot, they're like, hi, this is whomever, and I'm calling from.
And you had no, there was no heads up. You had no idea. Did you think it was a prank call?
I did. Yeah, and I hung up.
Oh,
because I was like, I'm like, listen, I'm busy. Yeah. Don't play on my phone. Right. I have stuff to do. Click.
Yeah.
They call back.
They probably get a lot of that.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Yeah. And so they call, like, I hung up twice, and they finally call back the third time. They're like, listen, please don't hang up.
Uh huh.
I'm for real from the White House. You can check, you know, the phone number or what have you. We're planning President Obama's second inauguration ball, and we're looking for products to include in the gift bag. Would you like to be a part of it? And I'm like, shut up. So how do you even know about
did
me?
You
so,
swear too? I think I would have
sworn. I probably did. Yeah. I don't know. And so it just so happened that someone who was a staffer at the White House had somehow gotten their hands on our products and liked them and suggested them in like a meeting. And that,
wow.
And I want to say how they get my number, but it's the government, right? Uh-huh. So somehow they got my number and they called me.
Yeah.
And so those two things happened around the same time.
Okay.
And so that really helped a lot. So sure. Whether you were an Obama fan or not, like just to say that my products were included in the president's gift bags was like a big deal, you know? And so those two things really kind of helped along the way. So here I am still in my house, haven't left my house. I'm making enough money to survive, but I'm not rich by any stretch at this point. And things are going pretty well. All that happened like 6 years ago. Now my son is 8. He's okay. Actually a part of the company.
Yes. Tell us about that.
And we're in 1200 Sally Beauty stores.
Wow.
We're launching in Ulta in a couple weeks. And we're still in Whole Foods.
Wow.
So yeah. But my son, he's the chief candy curator.
Okay. So what does that job role look like?
So when he was right around the time, we were like really grinding and hustling. I'd be in my basement making the products.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, I want to work. And I was like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I was like, do you want to help me fill bottles? Like I'm trying to. He's like, no. He's like, I want to have like a role. And I don't remember how he said it because he was two or three. But basically, he was like, he wanted to like have a legitimate
like a
title.
Task. Yeah.
The only reason because he wanted a name badge.
Yeah.
He wanted like to have a title on his like name badge.
Yeah, sure.
So I was like, what can you do? What can you offer as one of my employees? So he says, everybody needs to get candy. And I was like, well, how are we going to do that? We sell hair products. We want to sell candy. So we had this bowl of candy upstairs in the kitchen. He goes and grabs a piece and he brings it into the basement. He opens up one of the boxes and puts it in there and closes it up. He's like, everybody gets candy. And I was like, that's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
So he was just learning how to write at the time. So he would like write these little notes and he would say, thank you for your order from Caden. And it was super cute. And so he has become the chief candy curator. He's been doing that since he was 2 or 3. And it was fine when he was younger because he wasn't in regular school. So his hours were more flexible.
Uh-huh.
But once he started kindergarten and subsequently he's in second grade now, he has staff now. So so now
he's a boss.
Yeah, he's a boss now.
Uh-huh.
So he still selects the candy. He just doesn't put it in the packages. So every like quarter, every 2-3 months, we'll go to, you know, Sam's Club or some big candy store and we will select the candy. But he actually takes requests from the fans on Facebook Live.
Oh, get
so
out.
So we'll announce like, hey, we're going to go. Caden's going to be picking the candy on Saturday at 3. Make sure you're there to get your request in. And he'll say, what do you guys want? And people will say, I want Snickers. And he's like, let's go see if we can find Snickers. And he'll run and find it. And they see all this happening in real life. So it's really cool because it kind of gets like the whole family element.
People
love when they can really see the behind the scenes. And he's still 8.
Yeah.
So he's still cute. But I was like, what are you going to do when you're like 25.
Uh-huh.
He's
like, I'm gonna be running this company.
He loves it. And in the summer he tries to recruit his friends to come work for him. And
doesn't
pay them. He pays them in like candy.
Oh, of course he does,
like
right?
Yeah. So
you're global, right?
Yeah.
What countries are you in?
So we sell to every country in the world on our website.
Okay.
But
got it.
Distribution wise, we're in the UK. We're obviously in the United States. We're hopefully going to be going into Brazil pretty soon. We're in Canada.
Great.
And right now we're working on getting into Africa.
Okay. Wow. And so what was the process like of getting a patent?
Yeah.
Because you were relentless with that too.
Yeah.
Right?
So
that's not easy. It's exhaustive.
It was. And I did it by myself. So this is back when I had no money and I realized that a patent could cost me anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000. And at the time that was a lot of money and I just didn't have it. So my mom, again, was very much like,
hey, mom.
She was like, Gwen, this stuff is amazing. And my mom is one of those moms, like, she's not a co-signer on saying stuff is good just because I'm her daughter. Like, if it sucks, she'll be the first to be like, I'm going to keep it real with you. This is trash and you need to start over.
Okay.
So for her to have been like, this is amazing. Like, I knew she was going to be completely honest with me. So if, if she said it was great, it really was great. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, you need to file for a patent on this. Because if you don't, you're going to be at home one day twiddling your thumbs. Mm-hmm. You're going to watch TV and L'Oreal's going to have a commercial with your stuff. You're going to have no recourse because you didn't protect yourself.
Yeah.
So I had this vision in my mind of that happening. I was like, that would really suck.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let me. And to be fair, I didn't think you could actually get a patent on a hair product. I really didn't. But I was like, Mom, I don't think you can do this. She's like, you should just try. Mm-hmm. So only reason I ended up looking it up was to shut her up.
Okay.
So I look it up and
it's kind of what moms do, right?
Because so, I'm thinking like, I'll be able to tell her like, look, I looked it up. Uh-huh. So I looked it up and I'm thinking like, man, now I got to tell her she's right.
Yeah.
So. I find out to her delight and mine that I could actually file for a hair product patent. Okay. And at that point, I realized it was really expensive. So I was like, okay, I can do this myself. And so at that point, my son's still a little kid at this point. I'm like, I got to figure out how to teach myself patent law. So I basically went to like a self-imposed law school for patents.
Okay.
And just intellectual property altogether.
So, and you just kind of like made this up on your own, kind of putting yourself through the whole educational process.
So I would be at the library and I would be there from like 12 to 3 every day while he was in daycare. And when he wasn't in daycare, he would be with me and I would go down to the Detroit USPTO satellite office. And we are actually lucky to be the first city in the country that has a United States Patent and Trademark Office here. So I would be there and I use those two resources extensively. I was there literally every day. It was like I was back in college.
I read somewhere that you were there so often that if you missed a day when you came back, they would ask you where you were.
Yeah, they would. They'd be like, Gwen, where were you? I mean, some days they would even, at a certain point, they would have my phone number too. And they would be like, you know, are you okay? We haven't seen you like a few days. I'm like, no, I'm just sick. It's fine. You know, but I basically went there and I imposed this law school thing for myself so I could learn how to do it. And so I did it. It took me about 8 months to really feel comfortable enough and knowledgeable enough to know that I could file for the patent and then defend it if I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 6 or 7 months after that, I get a call from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and they tell me that they're going to go ahead and they're going to approve the patent. And I'm like, great, because to be honest, anyone who's ever filed for a patent, they know sometimes it can take years.
Right.
Because you've got to defend it. And it's really hard in 2019 or at that time, 2015.
Yeah.
To be able to create something that is literally brand new. So in order to get a patent, you have to be able to prove that it's brand new. Uh-huh. Nobody's ever done it before, thought to do it. And it's not like common knowledge or even like known like underground knowledge.
Yeah.
You have to be able to prove that. And this, we're deep into the world at this point. Like, how many new things are there?
Right.
You know? And so I felt very lucky and blessed that mine was done within a year, year and a half. But I did it all on my own. And I think it's just a testament to like, you figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just figure stuff out sometimes. Like, I didn't have the money. I wanted to get the patent.
Right.
I didn't want to be subjected to somebody else stealing my idea.
Yeah.
And so I made it happen. And shout out to Mom for even planting that idea in my head. But
thank God.
Subsequently, it ended up making me the first African-American woman to own a patent on a natural hair care product.
Congratulations.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
Like, this is 2015 at this point. Like, no one's done this before. This is crazy.
We have to get to Chris Rock.
Yeah, I know. We'd be so happy to meet him. Like, he would probably be really excited to know that he was a part
of this. And then what is Pitch Proof?
Oh, Pitch Proof. So Pitch Proof is a company. It's kind of like my side hustle. So
I'm
building my company. You need capital. And I did not want to take out loans. I believe in being debt-free as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy to say that we're a multi-million dollar company now, and we are debt-free.
Wow.
Which is really exciting. And
bravo, Gwen. That's like, we have to just take a moment about that. That's extraordinary.
Thank you. And I was really hopeful that I could get money for my business without having to give up a ton of equity.
Mm-hmm.
So pitch competitions are one way to do that.
Mm.
You can get anywhere from $5,000 up to like $200,000 for your business, debt-free, equity-free, and to do whatever you want with your business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found these pitch competitions and I would find that a lot of times I would go pitch at these competitions and I would be the only one who looked like me. Sometimes I'd be the only woman.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'd be the only person of color. And I was like, why aren't these people pitching more? I don't think people even know these exist.
Right.
And then two, the people who did show up, there may be 10 people on the stage, but really you're only pitching against two or three because the other ones don't know how to pitch.
Okay.
So, and I would see the same people show up all the time.
So what's the process of pitching like?
It's really applying.
Okay.
There's tons of pitch competitions every year. I mean, here in the city of Detroit, there's...
Yeah, I'm sure people don't know about this.
Yeah, there's the Dolphin Tank that happens every year. There's the Quicken Loans. demo day that happens every year. All these things happen all the time.
Okay.
And then outside of the city and outside of the state, there's tons as well. Like I've won some in Texas and California and all over the place.
Okay.
And there are some companies, especially startups, that are generally run by guys who know about these things.
Uh-huh.
They have someone on their team dedicated to just doing pitches. Some of these people. Oh. I didn't have the luxury of that.
No,
so
right.
I'm out here pitching. And again, I found that it wasn't something that a lot of people were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was something wrong with that. Because I think in the startup world, you automatically go to equity right. as how you gain capital.
Sure.
And I think that sometimes businesses take on equity too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because to take on, you know, a 20% investment
mm-hmm.
when you're making $200,000 looks a lot different at 20% when you're making $20
million. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that they take it on too soon. So if you can build your business with money that's equity-free and debt-free in the beginning, you're at a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pitch Proof is basically my coaching program where I teach people how to pitch. And I prepare them. I also give them a list of different pitch competitions happening around the country. They change all the time, so I'm always updating it. And it's really kind of like my way of almost giving back to help people be able to build these businesses because you need money to make money.
So how can they find you for Pitch Proof?
Yeah. So for Pitch Proof, you can just email me, which is at gwen@naturalicious.net.
Okay.
Pitch Proof, I don't have a separate email for Pitch Proof.
Okay.
But I also have a podcast, which you have to be on.
I would love to.
And it's called The Get Money Show.
Okay.
And it's all about teaching businesses how to live the life and have the businesses that they dream of. And we interview millionaires and billionaires and people who are up and coming change makers.
Okay.
And so the email address for that is hello@getmoney.show.
Okay. We'll say it again. Just
hello
in case.
Okay. At getmoney.show.
Okay. I just love you. I love everything that you're doing. Thank you for coming over to Lucy.
You're super cute.
You're super cute. No, you. We like each other's earrings.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Come back again. And I was hoping you were going to come over next week for dinner, but we're going to figure out another time to get together, hang out, and do some cool things.
I'm so sad.
You're super inspirational and love talking to you. Thanks, Gwen.
It's been a pleasure.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you liked what you heard, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com. And keep up with Danielle by subscribing for free in your favorite podcast app. Just search Karma Has Spoken.